You don't look happy, Kossoff observed.
I appreciate what you're trying to do, sir, Brad replied. I really do.
But?
Feeling confused, distressed, Brad tried to explain. I've always been kind of a lone wolf. I work best by myself.
Shaking his head, Kossoff said, this is too big a job for a lone wolf. You need a team, and you need to learn how to work with others.
Brad nodded, reluctantly, ruefully.
From Kossoff's office, Brad went straight to Littlejohn's. The anthropologist was not there, but the ship's phone system located him in the biology lab with Felicia. The two of them were sitting on castered stools in front of the heavy metal hatch of a pressure chamber. Through its round window, Brad could see three lab mice nibbling busily on what looked like lettuce. As Brad approached them, Felicia tapped a knuckle against the airlock hatch and said,
"They're breathing air from Gamma in there with no problems."
Despite himself, Brad asked, "How long have they been in there?"
2 hours, Felicia said. "I thought, as the bio member of your team, we ought to test the planet's air first thing."
"That's what I wanted to talk to you about," Brad said. Turning to Littlejohn, he added, "Both of you." The gnomish dark aborigine understood immediately. "You talked with Kossoff about putting together a team."
"I don't want a team," Brad said.
Felicia asked,
"You'd rather work alone?"
"I'd rather ask people for help when I need it. I don't want a committee. They'll be pestering me all the time."
"Well, thank you very much."
But Felicia grinned as she said it. "Oh, I think I understand," said Littlejohn. "You're afraid you'll be spending all your time being a committee chairman, shuffling paperwork without any time left to do any real work."
Brad nodded dumbly.
Littlejohn gestured to an empty stool standing a few paces away. "Sit down, Brad. Try to relax."
"Am I that obvious?" Brad asked as he reached for the stool.
"You look like a bow that's been pulled tight, ready to fire its arrow."
As he dragged the stool toward Littlejohn and Felicia, Brad said, "Kossoff just assumes that I'll need a team of people to help me.
I don't want a team. All I need is access to the individual people who can answer specific questions, solve specific problems."
"Without memos and meetings and all the trappings of a hierarchy," said Littlejohn.
"Exactly,"
Felicia said, "but Kossoff doesn't see it that way."
"Exactly," Brad repeated.
"It's an old story," Littlejohn said almost sorrowfully. "There's a job to be done. The bureaucracy puts together a group to tackle the job, but the larger the group, the more interactions among its people. You have to appoint a manager to handle all the interactions, and the manager becomes another bureaucrat. He stops doing any creative work."
"I don't want to be a bureaucrat," Brad said.
"Kossoff's only trying to help you, you know," Felicia said.
"Is he?" Littlejohn asked. "Maybe he's trying to break Brad's independent spirit, trying to make him a respectable, dues-paying member of the organization who follows orders and does things the way Kossoff wants them done."
"You think?" Brad asked.
"It seems possible."
"Then what do we do about it?"
Littlejohn sighed. "An ancient piece of wisdom says, when handed a lemon, make lemonade."
"I don't get it," said Brad.
"Kossoff's setting up a team for you. Don't waste your time and energy fighting him."
"But I don't want—"
Waving Brad to silence, Littlejohn explained. "Let him form the team. You appoint one of them to be your second in command. He's already named my number two person, Larry Untermeyer."
"Larry?"
Littlejohn's surprise was obvious, but he quickly recovered. "All right, then. Let Larry handle the organizational problems. Let him be the bureaucrat who chairs the meetings and assigns the duties. He reports to you, and you stay clear of the hierarchical busy work."
Brad blinked at him.
"You think that will work?" "Try it and see. Frankly, I think Larry will love the idea."
Felicia said, "He'll be protecting you."
"He'll be guarding access to you, leaving you free to do the work you need to do."
Brad looked uncertain, but he said, "I guess it's worth a try."
Putting on a serious face, Felicia said,
"One thing has to be clear, though. The biologist on your team has to have unrestricted access to you."
Brad broke into a wide grin. "Yes, indeed." Conflict. For nearly 6 weeks, Brad worked virtually alone, with MC, in building up a detailed picture of the conditions on Gamma's surface.
Larry Untermeyer reveled in his task of keeping Brad free from meetings and reports, and the 1001 demands on his time and energy that the members of his team unconsciously and automatically imposed on him. Larry used Brad's office more than Brad did. He made it his own, really, even down to removing Brad's desk and bringing in one that was bigger, more imposing. Brad had his modest desk toted to his quarters, where the robots wedged it into a corner of the sitting room. Then he spent his days happily working with MC, while Larry handled the administrative chores. One evening, as they were finishing dinner, Felicia told him, "People are saying that Larry is running your team, not you." Brad looked across the narrow kitchen table and saw that she was serious. "He's welcome to it," he said.
"Aren't you afraid he's going to replace you?" she asked. "What if he tells Kossoff that he's the de facto head of the team, and he wants to be recognized formally? That will leave you out in the cold. What'll you do then?"
Brad got to his feet and started clearing the table. "I'll have more time to spend with MC."
"More time?"
she half complained.
"You already spend more time with the master computer than you do with me."
Carefully placing the dishes in the washer, Brad turned back to Felicia, took her in his arms, and kissed her soundly.
"But it's quality time," he said to her.
Felicia smiled and nodded. More and more, Brad found himself intrigued by the coming close encounter between planets Beta and Gamma. As he sat staring at the latest projections by the astronomers, Brad said, "They're actually going to pass so close to each other that they'll share atmospheres."
"Briefly," said MC's disembodied voice,
"for 17 hours and 11 minutes.
"But that should cause terrific weather conditions," Brad said.
"All sorts of storms, awesome winds, as well as tremendous tides in the planet's seas. Maybe that's why all the villages are built well away from the seacoasts."
"Perhaps," said MC.
"I wonder how the close approach will affect Beta."
MC said, "The surveillance satellites orbiting Beta are reporting unusual movements across the planet's surface."
"Unusual movements?"
Brad switched the holographic display to a broad view of Beta's surface. Uneven rocky ground, thinly covered with grayish scrub and spots of lichen. Brad could not see anything moving.
"Seismic activity?"
"No," answered MC. "It's more like the movements of small animals."
"Animals?" Brad gulped. "There's no record of animal life on Beta. Nothing big enough to register on the satellite's sensors, at least."
"The surveillance cameras are set on wide field focus," MC said. "Not fine enough to resolve anything smaller than a meter."
"We should get narrower focus, then. Sharper details."
"Changing resolution," MC reported.
After several minutes, the view of Beta's surface shifted, zooming in on a scene of broken rock, like rubble, with scabrous patches of sickly-looking lichen here and there. No trees, no grass, no furry little animals scurrying along. Then something moved. Brad stared. Whatever it was disappeared in the flick of an eye.
Could it be an animal?
"Insufficient data to determine," said MC.
"Slow the imagery, please."
In slow motion, Brad saw that it was indeed an animal scurrying across the nearly barren ground. A small, furry, rodent-like animal.
"Animal life on Beta?" Brad exclaimed. "Do the predecessors' observations include anything like this?"
"No, nothing. But their survey of the Mithra system took place at a time when Beta was near the apogee point of its orbit, deep in its long winter. They concentrated their observations on Gamma, with its villages and obviously intelligent inhabitants. Beta appeared to be lifeless, so it only received a cursory scan."
Brad sagged back in his desk chair. "Have we discovered a new life form?"
MC's image took shape again in the three-dimensional display. It was smiling, almost contentedly.
"Perhaps," the computer said.
"A life form that the predecessors missed," Brad marveled.
Again, MC said merely, "Perhaps."
"Send more surveillance satellites to Beta?" Kossoff looked surprised, upset. "Based on one flick of an image?"
"It's animal life," Brad said. Sitting behind his impressive desk, Kossoff stared at Brad, silently mulling over this new demand.
At last he said, "The predecessor's data show no animal life on Beta."
"None that they detected,"
If they didn't detect any, then there's probably none there to detect. Feeling that Kossoff was being obtuse, Brad tried to explain. The predecessors saw that there was intelligent life on Gamma. That's obvious. So they concentrated their attention on Gamma. Their intent was to rescue intelligent species from the approaching death wave. Kossoff nodded. They made some quick observations of Beta, found nothing, and focused their attention on Gamma. Because there was nothing on Beta to detect, Kossoff said flatly. But what if they were wrong? Wrong? The predecessors wrong? A race of intelligent machines millions of years older than humankind, a race that explored most of the galaxy eons before the first paramecium evolved on Earth? They could be wrong, Brad insisted. They're not perfect. Nonsense. Then where are they now? How come they asked for our help? Why do they need us if they're so wise and powerful? Kossoff glared at Brad for several long moments. Finally, he muttered, All right. You call a meeting of your team. Let's see what they think. Brad groaned audibly.
Everybody's here, said Larry Untermeyer, sitting at Brad's right.
The conference table was filled. 12 men and women, representing the 12 specialist departments of the ship's scientific staff, everything from astronomy to zoology. Brad sat discontentedly at the head of the table, Kossoff halfway down its left side. Next to Felicia, Brad saw unhappily. All eyes were on Kossoff, as usual. Along the wall at the end of the table was the holotank, with MC's three-dimensional image sitting patiently, its hands folded on its lap. All right, Brad said. The satellites orbiting Beta have shown evidence of animal life there that we've never seen before. Is that confirmed? Asked the planetologist. Untermeyer replied, Three observations in the past 2 days. They seem to be little furry critters.
Like field mice, Felicia volunteered.
There's been no observation of animal life on Beta before this, the planetologist said. Untermeyer looked down the table and asked, MC, has there been?
None, said the master computer's avatar.
Could these observations be mistaken? Some sort of glitch in the satellite sensors?
Unlikely, said MC, to within a 93% probability.
Animal life,
Tifa Valente, the geophysicist, muttered.
Not intelligent, Untermeyer pointed out.
Despite his displeasure at having to sit through this meeting, Brad said, Beta is warming up rapidly as it approaches its perihelion. Maybe the local animal life hibernates until the climate becomes warm enough for them to become active.
Kossoff asked, How long is its year, its orbit around Mithra?
42 Earth years, answered the astronomer. It's a very elongated orbit.
So is Gamma's, said the planetologist.
It's hard to envision life forms hibernating for almost half a century, said Kossoff.
Not so, Felicia replied. Tardigrades, water bears they're called, can go without food or water for years.
And how many years? Kossoff challenged.
10 or more.
Well, that's hardly half a century. And how big are these bears?
Not much more than microscopic, Felicia admitted, her voice fading.
Brad jumped in. Felicia's point is that species on Earth can hibernate for long periods. Why can't species on Beta go even longer?
Shaking his head, Kossoff said, With the limited resources at our command, I don't think we should go chasing after will-o'-the-wisps. Concentrate on the problem at hand, the intelligent humanoids of Gamma.
Is that an order? Brad demanded. Kossoff started to snap out a reply, caught himself, and forced a smile instead.
Let's say it's a suggestion. I'm not a dictator, although I believe you should consider the limited resources we have. We know the humanoids of Gamma need our help. If there are living creatures on Beta, there's absolutely no evidence that they're intelligent.
No evidence yet, Brad said, almost angrily.